You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Kia ora, Alan. How's it going?
Hey, Nicholas. Hey, Sophia.
Hey, Alan.
He's back. How is it going? I am back. Yes, and it is 2024. Or do we say 2024? What do we say?
I think 2024 rolls off the tongue.
I'm kind of sick of the 2024.
I'm a 2000. Yeah. I got to say that. But 2024 is the international year of what, folks? There we go. Science related. This. See, and this has been mandated by UNESCO, I believe. It's certainly part of the United Nations.
You're making me feel ignorant.
I make myself feel ignorant.
Don't worry, I'm with you.
It's the International Year of Camelids.
Yeah, camelids.
As the name might suggest, these are camels. And related things like llamas, alpacas, vicuñas, and I'd never heard of iguanacos.
That's very cool.
There we go. So that's the International Year of Them. There you go.
Very cool. We love camelids, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. And it's very appropriate that llamas are in there because the High Llamas have a new album coming out this year.
Yeah. How exciting.
I'm excited.
It's going to be a beautiful year.
So, we'll see. I've got one of those birthdays that end in a zero this year, so I'm not sure whether I'm too thrilled about it or not.
That's right. 20 is nothing to be worried about. Trust me, Alan. I've done it. Be sweet.
Oh, you're too kind, Nicholas. Very good. Right, that's put me in a better mood. I hope all the listeners out there had a wonderful break.
Yes.
And they're enjoying this nice weather that's finally come around.
Finally, yes. Yeah. We've been waiting for it.
Amen, we have. And we're going to kick off the year by talking about fingerprints.
Excellent, yes.
Fingerprints. Right, so, you know, everyone has fingerprints. Everyone's busy inspecting their hands at the moment, I'm sure. And we sort of think of fingerprints as being a unique identifier for people.
Yeah, well,
and you know, it's been known for, you know, squillions of years, obviously, that you do have fingerprints, but in terms of their use practically and obviously with relation to crimes, essentially, they've only been used since the late 19th century. In terms of either identifying criminals or identifying victims, sadly, of crime or indeed of accidents and stuff like that. So, and the reason that we can do this is because supposedly fingerprints are unique to everybody. And even identical twins do not have the same fingerprints, which I think is kind of cool. I've got to say, I didn't know that. I kind of thought that I did, but Sophia is busy shaking her head, so she knew.
Well, just common knowledge, Sophia. Yeah. Just a little bit. Yeah.
So, you know, if identical twins don't have the same fingerprints, then obviously, you know, we can use this as a mark of someone's identity, basically.
Yes.
You would think. Okay, and so there's different types of fingerprints, and the three sort of dominating features of fingerprints are things called loops and walls and arches. Okay, and pretty much all fingerprints can be related to those three particular features that you have in your fingerprints. And so back in the days before computers, then that was the way that they basically put them all together. They would classify them in terms of these particular three features, and so, you know, you'd have a drawer full of walls and a drawer full of loops, etc., you know, those sorts of things, if you're going to go through and search these things, which obviously back in the days before computers was a hell of a job.
Yes.
But now obviously computers have made it a lot easier to be able to get matches and etc., etc., etc. And again, back in the day, sort of lifting fingerprints was a sort of a destructive technique. So, you know, you would be brushing them with the powder and everything, and then you'd be taking sort of impressions of them and those sorts of things, which, you know, it is not the best. But now we've got this, you know, amazing technology that can basically scan them and create a 3D image of fingerprints without having to actually touch the fingerprint. Okay, so, you know, you think this is pretty good way of basically looking for suspects at crime scenes and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However, However,
there is.
And so there's an undergraduate student, for goodness sake, an undergraduate, a final year undergraduate at Columbia University. And apparently back when he was a first year student, he had a chat with his professor or something like this about fingerprints. And he sort of thought, well, you know, hang on a minute, maybe they're not as diagnostic as we thought they were. So he went off with this idea. And what he has done, he's now utilized AI along with a bunch or a database of 60,000 different fingerprints to really question the fact whether fingerprints are as unique as we think they are. Of course, you can't have degrees of uniqueness. You're either unique or you're not unique.
Yeah,
you know?
100%.
You can't be fairly
binary.
Unique. You know. But so... he's just published a paper in Science, which is, you know, a very, very big science journal.
And he's still an undergraduate.
He's still an undergraduate. I know.
The
I know.
Science. Yeah,
the science.
The science. Exactly. And so basically what he did was he took this database of 60,000 fingerprints.
Yes.
And randomly he would be looking at either and put them all into pairs. Now, each member of this pair was either fingerprints from two completely different people's fingers, or they were pairs of fingerprints from different fingers of the same people.
Interesting.
Got me?
Mm.
Okay.
Yep.
So, and then he, using AI, so he's training the computer basically to look for similarities in those pairs of fingerprints. And what he's found is that, that. Now, again, you look at your fingers and you see all your fingerprints. You have 10 unique fingerprints, okay? And you're sort of thinking, well, you know, they're unique. They're not related. But he's saying that they are, that there are similarities between your different fingerprints on all of your 10 fingers that could perhaps, help identify you.
Interesting.
In fact, so... which is, you know, kind of interesting. And he's got to a point now where his AI system can, with a 77% degree of certainty, figure out whether two random fingerprints come from different people or come from the same people.
Incredible.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And you can imagine that that's got quite massive implications.
How do forensic scientists feel about this? Because they must be...
Well, this has generated a bit of controversy. So there are people sort of replying to this saying, oh, look, we knew this all along. We knew that, you know, there was relationships between the same people's fingerprints on different fingers. And, you know, some sort of, you know, they're sort of poo-pooing it and everything like that. But... you know, the guy who's published it saying, no, this has gone way further than anybody's ever gone with this before. And obviously the fact that it's got published in this very, very good journal, it's been peer reviewed and everything like that. So you'd hope that people have, you know, done their due diligence and found that, yeah, this is in fact new and extraordinarily interesting. And he's just a bloody undergraduate, for goodness sake. You know?
How dare they? He's pulling away the facade of university, Ellen.
But, yeah, it's digress for a second. I remember a story from way back when, where I went to see a talk by a, you know, world famous freaking chemist, and he started off by saying, "Oh, I got a phone call the other day from a first year student, and he said, 'Oh, Professor Gray, I've just read your latest paper, and I think I can help you.'" And he could.
That is so bold.
So, you know, some students out there, they're just extraordinary. This guy is obviously one of them. And we'll see where this goes, I guess. So, you know, if you can up that certainty rate up well above 77%, then you can imagine that at crime scenes and stuff like that, you know, where you've got multiple fingerprints, rather than having to try, you know, if you can say, oh, they come from the same person, they're different fingers, but they come from the same person, you can imagine this is going to make people's jobs a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah.
In terms of that. So I think, you know... As is always the case on Dear Science, more research is necessary.
More research is necessary. But I can't wait for the update on this one.
Absolutely.
It's going to be great.
Fabulous stuff. So, you know, that's an interesting thing to start off the new year with. There we go. Fingerprints.
I've got to let you introduce this next topic. Because when I came in here to do the news roundup, and Zoe was sitting here. Bless Zoe. We love Zoe. I said this topic out loud.
Mm-hmm.
and she started giggling, which made me giggle.
Oh dear, oh dear.
So what do you have up next for us, Alan?
Well, the seventh planet. There we say. The seventh planet from the sun. There we go.
Which is?
And it's not Saturn and it's not Neptune. It's the one in between. And, okay, it's, well, it depends where you come from, actually. You either pronounce it Uranus or Uranus. And I think the latter is more sort of American English, I think.
Both sound awful.
Yeah, terrible, terrible name.
I'd never realised that in the second one, but you've just pointed it out, and yeah, you're right. So, okay, we're stuck with it. We're going to talk about Uranus.
Okay,
there we go. There are, and damn it, I'm going to go with this. There are 9 planets in the solar system. Damn it, Pluto is a planet. Damn it.
Speak your truth, Alan.
It is.
Speak your truth.
And so we had Jupiter and Saturn that were visited by Voyager 1 way back in the early 1980s. And then we had Uranus and Neptune that were visited by Voyager 2. And Uranus was there in 1985. Okay, so these spacecraft were launched in 1977. And Voyager 2 gets there in 1985 and got photos of the planet, you know, which, you know, obviously we'd never seen before and everything. And, you know, that's quite amazing that they can send back photos.
Yeah.
And it was due to that that we knew that Uranus had rings, in fact. So it was thought that Saturn was the only planet that had rings. And, you know, if you've ever looked through a telescope at Saturn, which if you never have, you should, because it's just extraordinary.
It is the best looking planet. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's just looking like hanging in the air. Yeah. Anyway. But it was thanks to that we know that Uranus has rings as well. And but those are the only decent sort of photos. Stop sniggering, Nicholas. I can see this.
I'm so sorry. I need to control myself. Yes.
Oh, dear. You shouldn't sit in my chemistry lectures where I talk about backside attack. Obviously. That always gets a snigger. But yes, anyway. So we go now to the current day, and the James Webb Space Telescope has just now released photos that it's taken off Uranus, and absolutely gorgeous, really, really, really seriously impressive. And you can see these beautiful you can actually see features on the planet that stand out because of the way that James Webb works. It takes pictures in the infrared, doesn't take pictures in the visible. So we get an infrared photo of it, which is then sort of colorized to make it look nice, because obviously there's no colors in infrared. But you can see the pole, you can see the polar clouds and everything like that. You can see the rings. And if you've got a chance, look it up online, because it really does look rather spectacular. So, you know, the James Webb telescope, I think it came in at $10 billion, I think, something like that. You can't argue that it's not money well spent when, for example, you consider the amount of money that we spend on, oh, gosh, let's say weapons or something like that, you know. So this
money
is
well spent when you get that clear photo of Uranus.
He said it with a straight face too. Well done. Well done.
Sorry, Alan.
Okay.
He said no jokes.
But no. Right, and this is going to segue perfectly into the third story, which is Neptune, which is the next planet out. Okay, and has a much less sniggerable name.
Yes, Neptune.
Okay. Now, if you go and look online or in any books or something like that for a photo of Neptune, and again, taken by Voyager 2 way back in 1989. Sorry, it took 12 years to get from Earth to Neptune.
That's incredible.
That's a long time. And it took photos. Now, who remembers cameras with film?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Sophia's actually a really good film photographer.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Right. So how do we get a true representation of colour is the question. Now, you've got these phones and stuff like that that you can busy, you know, take photos of and everything. And you can manipulate those to the nth degree, can't you? You can take a really shitty looking photo and make it look spectacular with all the, you know, doohickeys and everything on your phone. Whereas when you were taking things on film, I think you had sort of less chance of doing that because you're making a sort of a permanent image. Now, again, you've got your size of your aperture and focus and all of that sort of stuff that you can play around with. But I don't think you can do the things on film that you could certainly do, well, maybe after processing or whatever on a computer or whatever. But so how then do you transport a picture from squillions of miles away at Neptune to Earth, okay? And how do you take that photo and everything? And is what you see a true representation of actually what it looks like? All of these sort of questions.
This is getting very deep.
Yeah. So you, yeah, and of course, what you need to do is then convert this visual, for want of a better word, picture, you need to convert that to zeros and ones, basically, so that it can get transmitted.
Hmm.
And then you need to reconvert it at this end and everything like that. So there's a lot of sort of manipulation that goes on. Now, when they took the original photos, what they did was they were apparently using a very, very sort of high contrast medium, let's say, so that they'd be able to see features on the surface of the planet.
Cool.
Or in the atmosphere or whatever. But what that then meant is that the picture that's transmitted back is not necessarily the true colour. Now, if you look, again, as I say, online for pictures of Neptune, you see this beautiful, beautiful deep blue colour. It's gorgeous, gorgeous deep blue. And that's got ramifications because, you know, what could give you a deep blue colour? What molecules are in the atmosphere that could give you this beautiful deep blue colour, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So that raises all sorts of questions. So what's happened very recently is that a bunch of professors at Oxford have now gone back to the original photos of Neptune from Voyager 2, and they've reanalyzed them. And no, it's not this gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous deep blue. It is a very, very pale bluey greeny color, very, very insipid. It looks just like, I'm gonna say it, Uranus. Okay. So the two look very, very, very similar, in fact. So all of the all of those photos that, you know, came back in the 1980s, they're just gonna have to be sort of taken off the web. And
I can't believe we got catfished by a planet.
Oh, he's on fire today, my goodness.
It's 2024. Sorry, it's 2024.
So, yeah, there you go. There's two sort of astronomical stories to start off the year, I guess.
Legend.
Plus fingerprints. So,
how beautiful. Yeah. I'm so glad to have you back. It's great to be here.
I'm very, very happy to be back. And thank you to MOTAT, as always.
Yeah.
They make this possible. So thank you, folk out there. And thank you, listeners, for listening. And thank you guys for hosting. And
thank you, everyone. It's
going to be a good year. There we go.
Thank you, science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.